Radio Prague News.
A group of Czech senators has said that the government as a whole should reject the recent claim by Russia over a deadly nerve gas. The government in resignation, it's nearing its 100-day mark, and the Czech president has congratulated his Chinese counterpart for his recent re-election. A group of 27 senators, including Senate Speaker Milan Škech, has said the government should categorically reject a recent Russian claim that the nerve agent believed to have been used on a former Russian double agent and his daughter in the UK could have come from the Czech Republic. Russia's foreign ministry at the weekend named the Czech Republic, along with Slovakia, Britain, Sweden, and the United States, as possible sources of the nerve agent used in the attack. Two Czech government ministers at the time refuted the claim, with the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Martin Stropnický, saying the Russian accusation was an example of how information could be manipulated. The government is to discuss the issue on Wednesday. This Friday will mark 100 days that the minority government of Andrej Babiš has held power in the Czech Republic, despite the fact the cabinet failed its confidence vote in January. It will also be some 5 months since the election. The prime minister in resignation has been leading negotiations in a second attempt to form a viable government, but has drawn criticism from the opposition, who argue that many of the promises currently being made by the outgoing cabinet will not be able to be kept, with the economy expected to slow. Mr. Babiš is working towards forming a second minority government with ANO, the Social Democrats, and with tacit support from the Communist Party. Czech President Miloš Zeman has congratulated Xi Jinping on his re-election as China's president. Prague Castle made the text public on Monday. China's parliament on Saturday unanimously re-elected Xi Jinping as the country's president, and on Sunday voted to amend the constitution to remove presidential term limits. In his congratulations, Mr. Zeman expressed the hope that Czech-Chinese relations would deepen in coming years. In other news, respected Czech author and screenwriter Zdeněk Malér, who penned the screenplay for the 2011 film Ligice and other feature productions, as well as writing dozens of books, died on Saturday at the age of 89. He had been in hospital in Prague's Střešovice. The news of his death was confirmed by his family on Sunday. Malér was not only a screenwriter, but also a musicologist, publicist, and teacher. In sports, major ski resort operators in the Czech Republic report more than enough snow on the slopes and expect to stay open until at least Easter and as late as mid-April. Ski Hill saw renewed interest at the weekend with the return of freezing temperatures, although strong winds in areas forced some resorts to close some slopes and lifts. René Hroneš from the Ski Hill Spindlerův Mlýn told the Czech news agency that it could be no other way with 100 kilometer per hour winds. And finally, in hockey, Czech players for the Philadelphia Flyers made a mark on Sunday in their matchup against the Washington Capitals. Jakub Voracek picked up a goal and an assist, while Radko Gudas got two assists to help lift the Flyers over the Caps by a score of 6-3. In net for the Flyers was goalie Petr Mrázek, who turned away 25 of 28 shots. I'm Jan Wellinger. That's all the news for now.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Ruth Franková. Coming up in today's program, Prague has become a hub for Russian operations in broader Central Europe, says political scientist. The Czech Chamber of Commerce marks 25 years of its existence. We have a roundup of the latest Czech sports news, and later we visit the Battle of Britain Museum on the south coast of England to learn about Czechoslovak heroes of the famous military campaign. All that coming up, so please stay with us. President Putin's re-election for a fourth term in office has evoked mixed reactions in the Czech Republic, reflecting the different perceptions of Russia today. President Zeman, who is seen as a strong supporter of President Putin, presents Russia as a promising business partner, but many politicians and ordinary people in this country still see Russia as a threat. So is Russia under a Putin a partner or a threat? That's a question Daniela Lazarová put to Petr Kratochvíl, head of the Prague-based Institute of International Relations.
Well, of course, Russia under Putin is both. On the one hand, it's definitely a business partner, but on the other hand, if you look at the recent Russian foreign policy under Putin in the third term of President Putin, then clearly it was a policy of outward aggression. The domestic growth, economic growth, is almost nil, and that's the reason why the legitimacy Putin tries to get comes mainly from his foreign policy adventures. In Georgia, 2008, in Ukraine, some 5 years later, in Syria as well. And I have to say this strategy is something that works in terms of domestic consumption, as we can see the approval ratings, even though there has been some election rigging, clearly, but still the approval of President Putin is very high.
What about the Czech Republic? There have been protests against President Zeman's policy in this respect and fears of the Czech Republic coming under Russian influence again. Is that a possible threat?
Well, Prague has become a hub for Russian operations in broader Central Europe. That is definitely the case. If you just look at the size of the Russian embassy here in Prague, which is huge, it clearly indicates that Russia is very active here. On the other hand, I think that we should not really demonize Russia. It is a state that is building up militarily, but at the same time, its economic model and societal model is not particularly successful. It's a country that has stagnated for the past 5 years, and I don't think that Russia has the capabilities or even the financial means to really substantially influence foreign policies of organizations such as the European Union.
How does Russia see the Czech Republic, its one-time satellite, today?
Well, on the one hand, particularly ordinary Russians have a very positive view of the Czech Republic in general. When you say Prague, people have strong negative connotations. On the other hand, as I said before, for Russian policymakers, the Czech Republic is hub or center of broader activities. So we should always, when we think about the Russian foreign policy towards the Czech Republic, think in the broader context. It's part of the broader strategy, broader policy regarding the EU.
Petr Kratochvíl, head of the Prague-based Institute of International Relations, talking there to my colleague Daniela Lazarová. The Czech Chamber of Commerce on Monday marked 25 years of existence. The organization's president, Vladimír Dlouhý, says its members have much to be pleased about, but says the state and the business community need to plan now for a future of increased automation. Ian Willoughby has the details.
The Chamber of Commerce is the biggest organization of its kind in the Czech Republic. It brings together around 15,000 business people, divided into 68 regional branches and 102 associations. On Monday, the Chamber marked the 25th anniversary of its establishment in its current form at a special conference in Prague. Speaking ahead of that event on Czech Radio Plus, its president Vladimír Dlouhý said his members were currently enjoying a good moment.
Jsem rád, že 25. výročí novodobé hospodářské komory slavíme.
I'm glad that the Chamber of Commerce is celebrating its 25th anniversary at a time when the Czech economy is doing well. Rapid economic growth, low unemployment, the public finances are in order. These are things many European countries envy us for. Politicians perhaps laid solid foundations in the early 1990s or later for us being where we are today. But without the hard work of the business community, we wouldn't be there.
While the Chamber of Commerce may have reason to pat itself on the back, Mr. Dlouhý said the business organization was also looking to the future.
I don't like the term Industry 4.0, but working processes will be organized differently. Individual production places will be able to communicate with one another without human involvement. That will sharply increase labor productivity. It will reduce employment in some areas, but it will also increase jobs in others.
Stakeholders must get ready well in advance for the major changes that this increased automation will deliver, Vladimír Drahý told PLUS.
Everybody, both the state and business people, has to prepare. The state needs to invest more and to take better care of infrastructure, above all, digital infrastructure, so that the whole country has high-speed internet coverage. Curricula need to be changed from elementary schools to universities. The state also needs to facilitate requalification because people will need to learn their whole lives. And business people will need to be more flexible in the face of new opportunities. They have to realize that the only way forward is by going digital and electronic.
The Chamber of Commerce is not financed by the state. Its members contribute some 250 million crowns to the organization every year.
Ian Willoughby with that report, and Ian stays in the studio with a summary of the latest Czech sports news.
The wildest derby of all time is how one headline described the 287th clash between eternal Prague football rivals Slavia and Sparta. Saturday's game saw visitor Sparta go in at half-time 3-0 up, with two of those own goals, including the opener, from Slavia goalkeeper Andrei Kolář. But the home side refused to throw in the towel. Slavia first got on the score sheet in the 70th minute, but still managed to save a point with a last-minute penalty for a final score of 3-3. That spot cake was awarded thanks to video-assisted referee technology in one of four key VAR decisions that shaped the match. Slavia goalie Andrei Kolář had this to say after the gripping encounter.
I've never before experienced being 3 down at half-time and then pulling level, but you can see there is great strength in this team. I don't think any other team could turn things around like that, and certainly not in a derby. Sparta are also really good, so I take this as a little victory. I always believed we could do it, but I believed it even more when we made it 1-3.
For his part, Sparta striker Václav Kadlec was left despondent by his side's second-half collapse, which evoked derision from the visiting fans.
We can only thank them for supporting us for the whole of the second half when it wasn't ideal. Naturally, I don't wonder that they were whistling at the end. I'd whistle at us too for that second half when we conceded 3 goals. It's the worst game of my career.
Meanwhile, leaders Victoria Pilsen pulled further ahead of second place Slavia on Sunday. Their first victory since the season resumed, an unconvincing 1-0 at Zlín, leaves them 9 points in front with the game in hand. The Czech Republic's Barbara Strýcová on Saturday claimed the doubles title at the BNP Paribas Open in Indian Wells, alongside Seiya Su Wei of Taiwan. The veteran duo overcame Russians Ekaterina Makarova and Elena Vesenina 6-4, 6-4, despite never having played together before. The winners had originally planned to play with different partners, but made a last-minute decision to pair up for one of the top tennis events outside the 4 Grand Slams. Kometa Brno were the first team to have reached the semifinals of the playoffs in the domestic ice hockey Extraliga. They overcame Vítkovice 3-1 on Sunday for a 4-0 result on games. Pardubice beat Třinec 3-0 to make it 2-2 in their best-of-seven series. And in the other two quarter-finals, Pilsen and Olomouc are drawn at 1-1 on matches, and Hradec Králové lead Liberec 2-0. That's all the sports news for today.
Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. The Battle of Britain is one of the most famous military campaigns of the modern era. But did you know a lot of Czechoslovak pilots took part in the colours of the RAF? Ian Willoughby finds out all about them now in this visit to the Battle of Britain Museum on the south coast of England.
In this area, there's remains of 14 Rolls-Royce Merlin engines. The one we can just make out at the back is the Rolls-Royce Merlin 3 from the aircraft flown by Joseph Kukul when he was shot down on the 7th of September.
David Brocklehurst runs the Battle of Britain Museum in Hawkinge, which is near Folkestone in Kent, and just kilometres from the English Channel. It was a key airbase during the famous July to October 1940 military campaign, during which the RAF fought off massive German air raids and changed the course of the war. The reason I've come to the museum is to learn about the scores of Czechoslovak pilots who took part. These include legendary names like Josef Kokal, who, after shooting down a Luftwaffe plane, was shot down himself and suffered severe burns, and Josef František, one of the highest-scoring RAF fighter pilots in the Battle of Britain. As David Brocklehurst shows me around the main hangar in Hawkinge, crammed during my visit with full-size replica planes and countless items connected with Battle of Britain heroes, we discuss Czechoslovak involvement in the famous military campaign.
We believe there to be 88 Czechoslovakian pilots that flew in the Battle of Britain, predominantly with 310 and 312 squadron, but others flew within the RAF, and of course František, probably the most famous Czechoslovakian in the Battle of Britain, flew with the Polish squadron.
Are we talking only about pilots? Were there navigators, or were these kind of single-man planes only?
All the Czechoslovakian pilots were pilots during the Battle of Britain. There was no actual air crew that fought, but obviously there was many air crew that flew in the Battle of Britain within the RAF, and obviously a lot more in the Luftwaffe. We're just acquiring a Bristol Blenheim, partly because of the 2,938 airmen and aircrew that flew in the Battle of Britain, about 800 of those actually flew on Blenheims, so there would actually be a three-man crew there. So, yes, although Czechoslovakians in the Battle of Britain were only pilots at that time.
What specific planes were they flying?
Predominantly Hurricanes at that time.
Do you know, at the height of the Battle of Britain, roughly how many flights would a pilot have made in a week, or how many missions would they have flown in a week, roughly?
During the height of the Battle of Britain, a lot of them were flying 4 to 5 sorties a day, sometimes up to 8 or 9 sorties a day. For Hawkinge, because of losses sustained on the 8th and 9th of July 1940, the airfield became a satellite station of many of the famous airfields such as Biggin Hill, Croydon, Gravesend, Northwold, Hornchurch. So the airfield would be evacuated at night. Aircraft would fly down usually at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. They would patrol out of here, combat out of here, refuel and rearm here. But last thing at night, sort of 10 o'clock at night, they would fall back inland to their inland airfields. Hawkinge became the most heaviest bombed and attacked airfield because of its location. It's about 4.5 minutes flying time for a German fighter and about 6.5 minutes time for a German bomber. It's 60 seconds for a cross-channel shell, and Hawkinge was heavily shelled as well as bombed during the Second World War.
Typically, how long would one sortie have lasted?
It depends. If there was combat, they would be using a lot more fuel, so that would be quite brief. Could be an hour, hour and a half, but sometimes it would be very quick. There is one occasion, actually, an aircraft taking off in Sussex that actually shot down a Stuka before it had a chance to actually retract its undercarriage leg, but that is an unusual occurrence.
Many of these Czechoslovak pilots flew with the 310 or 312 squadrons, but others flew with British RAF squadrons. Others flew with the Poles. Why weren't they all flying in the same squadron? Maybe it's a naive question.
I don't think it's ever really been a true satisfactory answer to that. It's probably because of language, possibly. Those that probably had a better understanding of the English language were absorbed into other squadrons. They may have arrived earlier than others. And obviously because of the losses sustained, they were using any pilots that were available and had the experience. A lot of the Czechoslovakian Polish pilots had quite high claims, but of course most of those that came to Britain actually were pre-war pilots and obviously had experience flying for their own countries and for the Low Countries during the Battle of France. So they had more experience. So they were easier in some ways to absorb into squadrons, because the problem with Britain by the middle of the Battle of Britain, most of the pilots coming into the fight were very inexperienced. Some were coming from Bomber Command and Coastal Command to fill in gaps, but obviously it was getting to a critical stage, so pilots were being absorbed wherever necessary.
Does that mean then that the Czechoslovak or Polish pilots were older than their British counterparts?
At that time, yes. Yeah, they predominantly were. You have pilots, certainly within the RAF, that at 28 years old were known as uncle. 5 18-year-olds were killed flying fighters during the Battle of Britain. But with the Czechoslovakian and Polish pilots, they tended to be older because they were pre-war and experienced aircrew and airmen.
The best known of them is Josef František, Could you tell us something about him, please?
He's probably one of the most famous Battle of Britain pilots and one of the top scoring Battle of Britain pilots. Nobody's really ever come up with a satisfactory tally of official claims. A lot of claims were made that can't be substantiated. Franceschek's claims, a lot of them can be. Some of those he was claimed as a full shoot down, but on occasions were probably shared. He caught aircraft that had been previously damaged, but he has gone down as, say, one of the top scoring airmen. Of course, he sadly lost his life at the end of the Battle of Britain in a flying accident. We have quite a few aircraft that he shot down, including a Messerschmitt 109, which is his last victory, which is, I think, about the 2nd of October 1940, and we've excavated that aircraft.
Tell us what items you have here that are related to the Czechoslovak airmen.
We have several aircraft in the museum that of aircraft that have flown and lost whilst being flown by Czechoslovakian pilots. We have over here one, we can walk over there. He was lost just after the Battle of Britain in November 1940, crashed by Southend. I can only apologise for my pronunciation, but Franceschek Hadrill. I'm sorry, that's one problem, mispronunciation of many different nationalities' names. But you can see here parts recovered from his aircraft. We believe he was shot down by Rolf Pingel, one of the famous German Battle of Britain pilots, who was shot down at 4:15 on the 5th of November 1940 whilst patrolling out of Duxford. His aircraft crashed just off to Southend Pier, and these items form a lasting memorial to him in the museum. So it's a part of the compressor pump for his Merlin, part of the tray for his compass, and even the leading edge of his wing. You can see the actual flash for where the Browning's machine guns come out of the wings.
In the past, would you often have had former Czechoslovak airmen visiting here?
Sadly, really only Joseph Kukal visited us, and that was back in the mid-70s. Sadly, obviously, because of the political situation, and those that returned obviously had a horrendous time, really, back home. So few were actually those that survived were ever able to make a visit to the museum.
And today, do you get any Czech visitors here at all?
We get a lot, because obviously the museum is as much your history as it is ours. So we're very pleased to see many visiting during the season. And it's a growing number as well, and we hope that to continue to grow.
From the main hangar, David Brocklehurst leads me to another lower structure at the Battle of Britain Museum, an institution he's been involved with since the age of 10. The building's absolutely crammed with photographs, uniforms and all kinds of eye-catching memorabilia.
We're now in the operation block, which in 1940 fulfilled the role of a control tower. You can see in the ceiling above 20mm cannon shell strikes in the timbers. You can also see 20mm cannon strikes in the floor in various locations where the airfield was strafed by German aircraft. So it wouldn't be a place you'd really want to be standing in 1940. The operation today is the heart of the museum. It contains remains of nearly 700 Battle of Britain aircraft, which obviously keeps the memory of those men alive and those that shot them down. Around this area, we have a lot of the artefacts that we recovered from Joseph Kukal's aircraft. You can see above his blind flying panel, the control column, the last thing he would be holding in the aircraft before he bailed out, and some of the newspaper articles covering his return to the museum to see the remains of the aircraft, but also see the lady whose husband had put out the flames when he came down, and he managed to put his flames out on the descent, but when he landed, his uniform reignited and they rolled him and put his flames out. We also have part of his propeller blades, radiator and his radio from his aircraft. All these were recovered, I think it was 1974, on a recovery from the Isle of Sheppey, where his aircraft had hit and embedded into the ground. A lot of the aircraft here that we've excavated tend to be between about 6 to 10 feet into the ground. The deepest we've excavated as a museum was a Messerschmitt 109, where we went 40 feet into the ground. But say sometimes you can see a few fragments commemorating the pilot or air crew. Other times there's more substantial remains.
Forgive my ignorance, but what is a blind flying panel?
That is your main instrument that would be directly in front of you on your dashboard. They would contain the critical instruments for your flying.
My visit to Hawkinge takes place during the off-season, but the Battle of Britain Museum reopens again on Friday next week, And operator David Brocklehurst leaves us with a message for listeners.
Please come visit and share our passion and knowledge for the subject and commemorate as many Czechoslovakian pilots as well as Allied pilots as possible. We do tell the stories of the Luftwaffe pilots because you can't tell one side of the story without telling both sides. And they were equally brave. They had mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, uncles, aunts. So we commemorate those and tell their stories where possible as well.
And that was today's main feature brought to you by Ian Willoughby. And now it's time for another episode of our Hit of the Century series, in which we are now in the year 1968.
Hit of the Century.
The second half of the 1960s was a period of significant political and social change, and there are many successful songs from those years that are played to this day. The year 1968 is particularly important due to the manifestations carried out by popular Czechoslovak musicians in a spontaneous response to the development and rising pressure from the Kremlin. In the days of uncertainty leading up to the Soviet invasion of Czechoslovakia in August, composer Jindřich Brabec and lyricist Petr Rada wrote an unusual song. This was after they had already written the winning song Cesta, or Path, at the 1968 Bratislavská Lyra Festival. They were then asked to create a song for the upcoming fall episode of the popular TV series, A Song for Rudolf III. In response, Brabec and Rada wrote an atypical musical prayer based on a quote by Jan Amos Komenský. Their composition was given to Mrs. Marta Kubišová, who first sang it on the 23rd of August 1968 in a heartfelt improvisation accompanied by pianist Angelo Mikhailov and drummer Karel Černoch. It was first released as a single and later on the album Songs and Ballads in 1969. It was no longer allowed to be published in the new sense. 1970 edition. A prayer for Marta remains a reflection of the unforgettable 1968 Prague Spring as well as the Velvet Revolution in 1989. And that brings us to the end of our program here on Radio Prague. Thank you very much for joining us and goodbye.
Ať mír dál zůstává s touto krajinou, zloba, závist, dášť, strach a svár, ty ať pominou, ať už pominou. Teď, když tvá ztracená vláda věcí tvých zpět se k tobě navrátí, lidé navrátí. Z oblohy mrak zvolna odplouvá a každý sklízí modlitba má, ta ať promlouvá srdcím, která zlobí čas nespálil, jak květy mráz, jak nás. Ať mír dál zůstává to krajino, zloba, závist, dášť, strach a svár, ty ať pominou, ať už pominou. Teď, když tvá navrátí. modlitbama dať promlouvá srdcím, která zloby čas nespálil, jak květy mráz, jak mráz. A tír dál zůstává s touto krajinou. Slova závistá, strach a svát.